Arm's Length Reporting, for investors who want the whole story. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome in time for the KE Report. I have Dr. Chuck on the line with me right now. You know, we're getting an awful lot of news about this variant that's out there. I just found that my neighbor, who's my best friend in the neighborhood, her son just was hospitalized because of the variant. It's turning out to be a very, very serious situation. Dr. Chuck, aside from being a brother, a Christian brother, is also a doctor. He's got some comments on the variant and the vaccine. Dr. Chuck, you're on, sir. Take it any place you want.
Thanks, Al. You know, 80% of the new cases are from the Delta variant. And I think people need to understand that it's really not that different than the other strains, you know, the Alpha and the Gamma. The Alpha was the kind of the first wave. The Delta is a little bit more transmissible, probably, we think. It seems to be still affecting the same population of patients. It's still the old and the sick that are being affected the most. Fortunately, it's not attacking any different groups like younger people or adolescents or young infants or whatever. So, you know, those folks are still safe. So it's pretty much the same, kind of the same risk profile as always. We're seeing a lot of sick people, though, and it's in a lot of unvaccinated people. You know, here in Texas, our hospitals are closing down again for elective cases, which is a real problem, you know. And some emergency rooms have two or three people on the ventilator. We've been transferring people from East Texas to West Texas, which is about, you know, 600 miles, if you can imagine. So just kind of keeping this in mind. And what I really want to talk about a little bit today, Al, is vaccinations, because I think, you know, there's a pushback. And I think a lot of people, especially conservative people, are feeling manipulated and coerced. And, you know, I've had so many conversations with people. I mean, I had a nurse who, you know, her daughter will not bring her granddaughter into her house unless she's vaccinated. We have a hospital that's fired 40 employees because they would not be vaccinated. And, you know, people, you know, can't go places where they have, you know, if they don't have a card. We have people that if they aren't vaccinated, even if they've had the virus, you know, they're not allowed to, you know, they have to be quarantined for another 2 weeks. So just some real common sense. First of all, you know, the decision to have a vaccine has got to come from within, not from without. And I don't think it's right for any entity, whether it's a state or an institution or whatever, to force someone either directly or indirectly to have a vaccine. But just taking a step back and thinking about the why of this, why this needs to be an internal decision, one from within, you know, Al, I think we need to realize that the risk, you know, for every different kind of spectrum of the population, there's a different risk benefit profile. And we kind of have to get over the emotion, the fact that we may be having some coercion and pushback to have the vaccine. Thinking about this, you know, first of all, that the risk of having the vaccine are pretty low. Yes, there are some risks, but you know, if you're in a high risk category, you know, a person who has a, you know, 80% chance of getting severe disease, getting a vaccine is a good idea. Now, I'm 54 and I got the vaccine and I'm glad I did, you know, because I'm always exposed to patients and I don't want to expose people to the COVID, you know, virus if at all possible. So, you know, I think it varies with each, you know, with each person. But once again, if you're still high risk, you still need to think about getting the vaccine, you know, and it needs to be an internal decision. And, you know, we're going to be talking a little bit about faith and trust and just understand that so often we have to overcome our emotions and really get down to, you know, overcome our feelings and get down to more facts. And so few risks with the vaccine, a lot of benefits, especially if you're, you know, have multiple medical problems and if you're, you know, a greater age. You know, once again, I still don't. Go ahead, Al.
I just want to say one thing. You know, I've become pretty good friends with one of our listeners, Larry. Larry has some negative feelings about the medical community, some of which I really am interested in. But I want to say one thing, Larry. What Chuck is telling me, as I understand it, is mandatory vaccination on the part of whether it's the state government, the county government, the city government, or the federal government. Chuck is saying he doesn't believe in that. Is that correct, Chuck?
That is correct. I don't believe that. But think about this. You know, if you have kids, you understand the psychology of this. You know, my oldest son, I can tell him to go one direction or make a suggestion. He'll do just the opposite. And I think that's what people are seeing, because, you know, we're so emotionally tied into this because we've heard so many mixed messages from the media. And I think another thing that plays into that is because, you know, we get a little skeptical when people are forcing us to do something. We begin to kind of wonder, well, why are they pressing me to do this? You know, and so I think we have to take a step back and just realize, and a little skepticism is good, but we need to realize too that, you know, there's a lot of benefits from the vaccine of just having the peace of mind. I mean, it's not a cure-all. You know, initially, we kind of thought the vaccine was going to, you know, fix everything. We're going to be bulletproof. But you can still get the virus after having, you know, the vaccination. But the difference is that you're not going to die from it. And you're not going to get, a severe case of the virus. And so, you know, here's kind of my algorithm when I talk to patients. You know, first of all, if you've had COVID, then you already have an immunity and you don't need a vaccine. Okay.
What about a booster?
Well, I think the word's still out on that. Now they're suggesting a third phase. I'm not going to be in a big rush to get a booster. Actually, I had the vaccine and I think I got another case of COVID. So I think I've had plenty of boosters. Save the shots for somebody who really needs them. You know, let's don't be wasting shots on people who don't need it. You know, the young and the infants and school age kids. Let's use those resources for places, even other countries that could use the shot much better than we do. So, but you know, we got to get over those emotions because, you know, we've heard so many mixed messages. But the bottom line is, you know, if you get COVID and you're, you know, at greater than 70 years of age, you're going to get sick. I mean, my wife got COVID and, you know, we did not vaccinate her because she had a neck surgery and she had got immunosuppressed and had shingles. So we just waited. And in the interim, she got COVID. And I'm telling you, man, it's a tough disease. And we're seeing people, you know, die. We're seeing people die. We're seeing people on ventilators. And, you know, it's just one of those things, getting beyond the emotions, you have to trust the vaccine, you know. And I think one of the problems with people trying to manipulate people and force people, coerce people to get the vaccines is that we're pushing back. And I think it's gonna boomerang back on the people that are forcing people to do this.
Chuck,
because basically,
Chuck,
it's based on trust.
Yeah, I want to say one thing, Chuck. We got to take a quick commercial break here in about a minute. And I just want to wrap up this segment by saying we're going to talk in the next segment with Dr. Chuck about some what I would have to say are spiritual issues. If that's offensive to anybody, simply let me know. We won't talk about it in the future, but it's very, very important to me. What I'm hearing you say this time, Chuck, and I'm going to have to cut this in just a few seconds, is that you feel that mandatory immunization, mandatory, is incorrect, and you're saying that your wife was not immunized. I want to make that very clear. Ladies and gentlemen, words of sincere wisdom from Dr. Chuck. Be right back.
Your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome back. Continue my discussion with Dr. Chuck. I want to talk about what I call the toolbox that you have to carry to deal with life effectively. You know, life has a lot of challenges. I just lost my wife a little over 2 months ago. That's a hell of a challenge, let me tell you. And Gordon knows that because Gordon lost his wife fairly recently also. It was a number of years ago. But the most important thing that I have in my toolbox is my faith. My faith has kept me sane in the aftermath of my wife's demise. I want to say that what I'm saying is God, whether it's the Jewish God or whether it's the Christian God, which I happen to believe in, has kept me safe. Let's talk about that toolbox, Chuck. You're the expert in this area. You're on, sir. You got the mic. Say anything you want.
Well, Al, I don't know if I'm an expert on this, but you know, in the last segment we talked about, you know, trusting in the vaccine, you know, and there's a lot of phases that are involved in trust, just like what people are going through right now. Should I get the vaccine? Should I not get the vaccine? You know, there's the emotions, there's people telling you, maybe the pushback that the people are receiving. Then there's all the data that people are trying to process. And then there's the volitional. So there's an emotional part, an intellectual part, and a volitional part. You know, as we think about faith, it involves all of those things. You know, some of us have had really bad experiences, and our emotions just well up when people start talking about
Chuck,
God.
Chuck, you're banging something around on your end. Try to stay real quiet on your end, aside from your talking. Thank you.
Okay. You know, people's emotions are really important, and sometimes we have to overcome those emotional barriers to faith. And I think just analogous to the COVID vaccine, you know, there's a lot of emotion that people are having right now. They're getting mixed messages and, you know, and so, but we need to kind of take a step back and look at the intellectual questions about faith. You know, I don't have enough faith to not believe in God. You know, I mean, every person has a set, they believe a set of intellectual assumptions, you know? And the question is, you know, are our intellectual assumptions credible? You know, and I really believe the longer I'm a Christian, that Christianity is verifiable, that we can examine the evidence and that we can look at it intellectually, and we can really see that, you know, Christianity best fits the world that we live in. I mean, it's real. I mean, it's, you know, so many times people have belief systems that are unrealistic. They don't fit the world in which we live. It's kind of like breathing underwater. And so that's one of the things I want to encourage people about, is to really examine, you know, their faith. And, you know, beginning with the fact that Christianity is verifiable, not only by science. You know, I know you've had Stephen Meyer on the show talking about the expanding universe and the fact that, you know, the evidence, scientific evidence showing that, you know, that there actually was a beginning, you know, which kind of leads us back to what Genesis says about how God was there in the beginning. But there's also other things. We know ourselves pretty well, and it's interesting, even listening to the COVID debate, there's this people that are pushing what we should do, what we ought to do. And, you know, it seems like everybody refers to this standard that's external to themselves, a moral standard. You know, we have this often about what a person should do and, you know, what a person ought to do, especially if somebody cuts you off in traffic or, does something to you harmful. I mean, we just know that there's this external reference, this moral law. And we have to stop and ask ourselves, where does that come from?
Yep.
And so, you know, not only science, not only what we call the ontological arguments, but there's also history. And one of the things about history, as opposed to so many other, you know, religious belief systems, is that Christianity is rooted in history. You know, we can go back and we can verify all of those events that happened in the Bible. And so just, you know, once again, getting over the emotions of faith in God, and moving to the intellectual aspect of it. And then there's the volitional aspect of it, you know, the aspect of the will. And I think this is sometimes the hardest thing for many people to really get over. You know, it's really, when you think about it, it's really easy to be autonomous and to be in control of your universe, or at least think you are, you know. But when you begin to move into a faith in God kind of perspective, often, you know, we have to yield to a higher power, to God Himself. And so, you know, it involves the whole being. It involves our emotions. It involves our intellect. And it does involve our will. And so, but the great thing about Christianity is that it can be trusted because it can be tested. And there are so many other worldviews that can't be tested. For example, atheism and naturalism, evolution, secular humanism can't really be tested. You know, once again, we can't prove that something happened by haphazard, random events, given enough time and chance, because we can't ever put that in a test tube. You know, and so, you know, you have to think about that. And so, you know, I think that's one of the reasons why I believe, you know, what I believe. But once again, just like the COVID vaccine, ultimately, you can go through all the emotional things and the intellectual things and the volitional things, the will things, or just, I don't want to have the vaccine. Ultimately, you have to make a decision. You have to make a decision. Am I going to have a vaccine? Am I going to trust God? And, you know, a lot of people are somewhere on that process. But I have found over the years that I don't have to throw my brain in the trash can to be a Christian. That there's really evidence that I can root myself in that goes even beyond my experience.
Chuck, I have to agree 100% with you. We're down to about a minute left here, actually less than a minute right now. I just want to say one thing. I'm going to close this out. You're very able to do that, but I want to say one thing from a personal standpoint. My toolbox, my Christian toolbox, has allowed me to deal very, very effectively with the death of my wife. I was married to this wonderful woman for 47 years, and I have to tell you, losing her yep. could have very easily caused me a complete nervous breakdown. What would that have accomplished for her? Absolutely nothing. I am now doing everything I can to glorify Kathy, and I'm doing it because that is exactly what God told me to do. And that's the best defense I've got. Thanks, Chuck.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Welcome in, time for the second half of the KE Report. I'm going to devote this entire second half, which is segment 7 and segment 8, to political topics. I have Jim McKinney on the line with me right now. I'm going to ask Jimmy to take over the mic here in 2 seconds. Also have Rob Shire on. Rob was introduced to you guys yesterday in our daily editorial. Jimmy, the microphone is yours. Take this any place you want to.
Well, I think we've got to start off with probably the most important issue that's facing the globe right now, and it's not COVID. It's actually what's happening in Afghanistan and the Taliban rapid, basically in a week or 11 days, take over the entire country after the United States had put nearly $2 trillion worth of investment, had trained a very large military force, and had, you know, attempted over 2 decades to build institutions that would last. And unfortunately, we see that demise rather rapidly. But the more important issue that is facing the world right now is how the United States government, in particular, this administration and the leader, the executive office, Joe Biden, is handling it. And unfortunately, our major foreign allies, Angela Merkel, Macron, even Justin Trudeau, who attempted to get a hold of the White House but couldn't, and actually ended up speaking to Hillary Clinton about issues related to Afghanistan withdrawal. We are seeing an absolute failure in leadership and the basically taking, you know, Joe Biden not taking questions, the media attempting to spin this. Well, we have admittedly by the White House between 10 and 15,000 Americans stuck outside the wire of Karzai International Airport, KIA, in Kabul. And why we went from 2,200 troops up to now, I guess, around 7,000 to do the evacuation, while the French government is doing convoys for their embassy to pull people out, while the UK are sending commandos into town to pull their people out, and our, the largest military in the world, under the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, General Milley, and the Defense Secretary Austin, saying that we aren't capable of going out and getting Americans, not to mention the 65 to 80,000 Afghans that work directly with U.S. government and non-government organizations, and as well as our military forces that are under threat from the Taliban. This is a global disaster, and it is absolutely going to have ramifications for a long period of time if we can't come out of it. And unfortunately, I do not see actions that are going to somehow protect the Americans that are there, the volunteers that committed. I mean, we're talking doctors, nurses, and teachers. Yeah, just volunteers out in, you know, with Peace Corps, with International Agency or Agency for International Development, AID, people that are out there just trying to do better, that took a risk to go help support this. And we walked away and let it crumble, and we don't have an answer for it. It's unbelievable.
Well, given the fact that I would have to say this is very definitely close to the first major foreign affairs issue that President Biden has had to deal with, I'm really not sure, not being in the Oval Office right now, I'm really not sure that I can actually say that he's done a terrible job. I mean, maybe he's holding something under the table. I don't know, but it sure would seem to me that the people at the airport waiting to get airlifted out of there are in big trouble right now. Because one thing about the Taliban, the representatives of the religion of peace, pardon me for saying that, the one thing about those guys is they don't screw around. You know, you vote the wrong way, they cut off your hand. You don't wear a burqa and they cut off a woman's head oftentimes. I mean, these are people you have to be very, very careful with. And they scare the daylights out of me, and I'm not sure that the executive office is handling this appropriately right now. I want to bring up something that I heard last night on the news, and that was to guarantee a trip out of Pakistan right now, Afghanistan. You pretty much have to guarantee that you're willing to pay $2,000 for that ticket. What do you think about that, you guys?
Well, I can just say that, you know, I served in four different embassies. Every single embassy is required to have an EAP, an emergency action plan. It is also required to keep contact. Now, you don't have to do it, certainly in London and, you know, Paris. They don't track everybody in the country because there are, you know, hundreds of thousands of Americans there. But they have the opportunity, and inside that emergency, that EAP, that emergency action plan, there are policies for what happens. In the more risky places, absolutely must happen. Now, there is... The way it works is if there's an emergency evacuation, people do, the State Department is supposed to, you know, not by congressional law, they're supposed to charge people for evacuation. Of course, Afghanistan is a completely different environment, and in an emergency situation, to actually have people sign those notes at this point when it was the cause of the U.S. government for the collapse, not the the situation outside of someone else's fault or some, you know, emergency, like a natural disaster. You have to wonder, but yes, that is a policy. That's been the policy for many, many years in many places, but it is frustrating to see it being used for a bunch of volunteers and a bunch of military people that were sent over there, and as well as other Americans that were trying to do good for the community.
You know, we got to take a commercial break, Rob and Jim, we got to take a commercial break, but we have a couple of minutes before we need to do that. I kind of want to switch subjects. We got a whole entire segment to do after we do this one. There are so many things going on right now in my country, America, and obviously your country too, that all three of us truly love. There are so many things going on right now that I think need opinions, because our opinions bring out the opinions on the blog of our very intelligent listeners. You know, it's funny. I addressed a comment this morning from CFS, our retired tenured physics professor from Purdue University. He was talking about how people are making money doing daily editorials, Jimmy, like you and I have been doing now for about 5 years. And I thought to myself, you know, we're not charging for this, but I got to tell you, we're pretty good Americans to be able to be willing to put this information out free of charge. And I am very, very proud of that, because we are proving the true love for our country, for lack of better terms. What do I mean by that? I mean purely and simply that we're not telling you what to believe. We're simply giving our opinions. And if our opinions kind of jiggle some memory, some opinions from you guys, I mean, when you look at the intelligence quota of our bloggers, which has got to be very, very high, more and more people are starting to listen to what we're starting to say, because they truly appreciate, as Lance has said numerous times, my wife is a diehard viewer of CNN. God bless her, Lance. The only thing I can say is she's looking at the other side of the coin. You have complimented Jim and I more than 27,000 times on the views that we are giving on this, and you are telling me that we personally are giving the other side of the story. America has also always been willing to give the other side of the story, and it only started that the other side of every story was not being given when many of the progressives said, we just simply can't do that anymore. I find that to be very, very interesting, and I find that to be very, very disconcerting for people living in America. Stick around right after the commercial break. We're going to be right back. Welcome back. Time for the second half of the KE report. We were going to go away from Pakistan directly into some of the domestic situations going on in the country right now. But Jimmy has some things he wants to say about the international situation before we do that, as does Mr. Shire. Jimmy, let's start with you, bud.
Well, okay, I wanted to give a kind of a metaphor for what happened here, but I would like to hear Rob's question first. Maybe I can answer it in this response. So, Rob, you had a question for me. What was the question?
Well, historically, we've tried to help Afghanis to battle the Taliban and give them the power to defend themselves. And it was often very difficult to train these people to do it, and also their willingness to stick to it. I mean, a lot of the Afghanis switch their allegiances, you know, depending on which way the wind is blowing, and just go ahead and join the other side, depending on what their situation is. What do you have to say about how difficult it is to sway the majority in Afghanistan?
So yeah, and this absolutely, I'm glad I asked you to ask the question, because this is exactly what I wanted to talk about. So it is difficult. And the problem in Afghanistan is you have this long history of whoever has the power, and the power is based on your region, your tribe, your local, you know, village leadership, and who basically who has the gun. If you don't have trust and faith, just think about an American. We've got this big debate going on defunding the police. If you don't think anybody's going to come and help you when you dial 911, then what are you going to do? You're going to have to take responsibility for yourself, or you're going to have to succumb to the pressures of whoever's putting pressure on you. In Afghanistan, there's never been somebody that you could call 911 that had a blanket set of rules and responsibilities, a constitution or a set of laws that supported you. It was run by power, who had the most power. So it's very difficult for these villages and for the volunteers to build national consensus based on the rule of law. And so what you see is the Taliban pressuring in the rural areas with the gun, and there was no one there to go and help. Now, what we had done by spending an incredible amount of money was try to develop a capacity and a national consensus with people that their rights were important to them, the basic foundations for democracy, that you should have a choice, that someone shouldn't just tell you how to think or believe with a gun at your head. And what that meant was that we were not making the decisions, but democracy by its very nature is a choice. You can't force democracy on somebody. It has to be a choice. As people wanted more democracy there, they were still in that balance. And this is what I'm going to just, I'll simplify and end here in a second. I look at it like the Seattle Seahawks for people here in the Pacific Northwest, or any American football team. You have a new team. You've got players that are committed to try and do something, but really not sure what the rules are. But you got a really sophisticated West Coast offense. You've got a great coach. You got a great quarterback, but you don't really know what's happening. And halfway through the game, the quarterback walks off the field. And then you look over at the bench, and there's no coaching. And then there's no football, because you take away the football and the logistics. That's what happened in Afghanistan. What the hell? What else could they have done? They did not have the backstop. They had no one to help and call 911. And we, with a very small force, were able to keep that going for a while. And walking out, undermining all that confidence and faith, left those people with no other option. And that's my position on it. And I think we could have done it. I think we could continue to defend with a very small force. We would have been in combat operations. I think we could have just had basically a security assistance program like we've done over decades and generations in other nations, that would have just helped advise and assist, and we could have helped target it against the international global terrorists and kept the Taliban at bay and strengthened them over. But it would have taken a long time. It would have taken a long time.
That answered the question for you, Robbie.
It does. My next question is, how are we going to fix this?
You know, it is the debacle, the fear by this administration. I mean, and they've said it publicly. They just don't want to get into a firefight in Kabul. We've been fighting there for 20 years. In order to get Americans out, in order to help people and, you know, down the road and not face another complete retribution, they'd have to completely flip their policy. This administration, I don't think that they're going to do that. So for what I see is, I mean, unfortunately, the reality is we're going to see a lot more pressure in other places in the world, because taking advantage of the fear this administration has of getting into conflict. And I think we're going to face some very difficult national positions for a while. And I obviously think that this is going to continue to bleed in Afghanistan. The administration can't run from it, because you still have all these people there, and it's going to continue to hurt them. It may actually bring down this administration because of the lack of decision-making, the public statements they made just weeks before that are just so embarrassingly inaccurate, and then, of course, the attempts to blame others, which are really unfortunate, and I think it's going to continue to bleed on them. So I don't know how the solution, if it were up to me, we would have never gotten to this point, but I would have also reestablished very rapidly the statement that we are going to protect Americans. I would have put a large force in there to do evacuations. I would be willing to fight if necessary to get our Americans out if we really are going to pull out. And then we move out. We move out. I would not recognize the Taliban in the future. They came to power with the barrel of a gun. They're intimidating and threatening people. They will lie. They will continue to do it. They've been fighting for now since the mid 90s, and they're not going to change their ways.
You guys, Big Al wants to throw one thing in here that I think is really, really important. The Middle East is a quagmire. It's a no-win situation that started back way before the 1949 when Truman recognized Israel as an independent country. It started back in the teens and the 20s when France, America, and England basically decided it was time, you know, the Balfour Declaration, they decided it was time to give Israel a homeland. That is a very, very important thing you have to remember. There were a lot of people in the Middle East at that time that are now considered to be terrorists, et cetera, that felt that their land was being stolen from them. I've read a lot of books by Israeli authors who kind of question that particular issue, and I want to say this. You know, if the tenets of, for example, the New Testament were followed, which is the specifically the proclamation of the kingdom, love yourself, love your God, love your fellow man, I think we'd have a much better situation in the Middle East right now. The Israelis, God bless them, have gotten to the point where if they have the technology, in my opinion, to destroy the entire terrorist universe located in the Middle East, and if it comes to that, they will do it simply to protect themselves. It's just a damn shame to me that this can't be resolved utilizing love for your fellow man, etc., etc. But I gotta tell you, I really don't think that it can. Jimmy, you're watching the clock. You know we've only got about a minute left. Give us an opinion on that.
So there are the idealistic view of the world is fantastic. And we in America have lived under a very stable system for a long period of time. So we look at the world in a very different way. And the academics that are making decisions right now don't have real world experience. There is dark out there. There is evil out there. There are people that use individuals in order to gain power.
You bet.
There are that manipulate. And we're seeing it. We're seeing it on a massive scale that the reality is much different than the ideological hope of goodwill. It takes a strong leader, a strong understanding to push back against those types of violent and evil actions in order to protect the innocent, in order to protect our interests in the long run. And I think we're going to, hopefully people are going to wake up and see it, and that's what it's going to take. It's going to take political will to make hard decisions and challenging times against dark.
Unfortunately, evil is in the eye of the beholder, and that's something that we have to understand. What I want to say is, Robbie and Jimmy, obviously, I certainly appreciate your opinions. This show has been a lot of fun to put together. We'll be back next week.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.